Welcome to That Season Air podcast. I'm your host, Gina. Stick with me as I chat to season airs, expats and adventurers across the world, sharing their inspiring stories and interesting insights into living and working abroad. On today's show, I catch up with Swedish season air and one of my closest pals, Wendela Langeen.
I think one time I ended up in a car with like two German, old German dudes, and they were playing like German folk music, and I was like alone in the back. They didn't understand a word of English. And I was like, this is probably a situation we should not put ourselves in, but I'm just going to go for it.
In this episode, we get the lowdown on Wendy's experience working in the hospitality industry in Austria, Australia, New Zealand and Norway, and how her seasons in the snow helped pave the way to her new job role working for Swedish winter sportswear company Strobebrand. Tune in as we hear Wendy's insights into season air life, and stick with us right to the end of the show as Wendy recounts her hectic pandemic experience, including lockdown in the mountains with yours truly. If you enjoy the podcast and want to show your support for the show, you are now able to buy me a coffee via the link in the show notes. And without further ado, here's the show. Wendy, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm very good, thank you. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's so nice to be on.
What have you been up to?
Well, I have been working and working and working.
Ah, fun.
And then I've tried to ski a little bit, but it's quite hard when you work during the day. So They do have nighttime skiing here, though, with like full lights and everything. That's probably something I should try out before I go.
Sounds like a good idea.
Yeah, definitely.
So, welcome to the show. Tell us a little bit about yourself. Where are you from and what is your current situation?
I'm from Sweden. I'm from a little coastal, it's not a village, it is a city, but it's like a population of 30 or 40,000. Mm-hmm. And I have been living in Austria quite a lot, / Norway. And now I'm in northern Sweden on a season here.
Awesome. So even though you're in your home country, do you see yourself as a season air currently?
Not really, because I don't know. It just feels like I'm just here working. It doesn't feel like, I feel like a season is full of other things than working.
Yeah,
but so now it's just like, oh, I just moved somewhere and you can ski there. Like, it doesn't really feel like I'm a seasonaire, if you will.
That makes sense. So,
yeah.
So we've known each other for many, many years. We met my first season in Meyerhofen, and I think it was your first season in Meyerhofen.
Yeah, it was my first season in Meyerhofen as well.
Yeah,
I know. I knew you as the tequila drinking girl on the strip pole.
Come on, man, don't do me like that.
She's going to cut that out. Fuck.
You know me too well. Maybe it'll stay in, maybe it'll stay in. But yeah, don't give away all my secrets. Goodness. Didn't invite you here for that.
Yeah, thanks.
So yeah, how long ago was that?
I don't really. It has to be, because I always try and think when I started to come to Meyerhofen. And I know I've done a few seasons there, but it has to be like 2014, 2015.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's when they started that season air group, and it says 2014, I think, and 2021. Okay. So I always like laugh a bit at that. I'm like, oh, it's been so many years. But not that it's super funny, but yeah.
Yeah, no, I always forget how long we've been here, actually. So yeah, around 2014-ish, we think.
Yeah, I'd say that pretty much.
So what was it that first sparked the idea to live and work abroad?
So I'd say that it was my friend's older siblings and my older brother. And we always have been like a skiing family. We have a house up here where I am now in Åre. So we always went on skiing holidays. And I never really liked school or wanted to like go to uni after high school or anything. So I always wanted to go traveling, and then skiing and traveling just seemed like the perfect combination. So yeah, it was just always in my mind, really. I just hopped on in a Facebook group and went to St. Anton.
Did you do much traveling before that? Did you do anywhere else, or did you go straight into doing ski seasons?
No, I went straight into ski seasons because I basically finished school and then worked for like a few months and then went So yeah, it was pretty much straight away.
Why did you choose St. Anton?
I think it was because, so I was going to go with one of my best friends, Matilda, and her older sister had been there. And she said it was super cool and stuff. So they're like, oh yeah, we'll just go there then. And I think my mom has been there as well. And it was like bragging about the après-ski to me. I was like, oh, that sounds sick. So we just went there, which was amazing. It was really cool.
So you've been doing seasons pretty much ever since and traveling in one form or another. Is that kind of what you always wanted to do? Like, what did you want to do when you were in school, for example?
I was thinking when I was younger, because I sing, or I used to sing. So I was thinking in my head that I wanted to maybe do something with music, but that's obviously quite hard to get into. And then the traveling part sort of took place. So then I just like dove into that. Or when I was a kid, I wanted to be a policewoman. Not because you do good things in society, just because you can like put people in handcuffs and like put them in jail.
I think you would have been a really good policewoman.
Yeah, great. I'll just put in everyone behind bars for no reason.
Tell us a little bit about what it was like in St. Anton. How was that first season for you?
It was amazing. So the friend that I was going to go with, Matilda, she actually became a ski instructor and she did a whole course on that. I did not go that like route, I didn't become a ski instructor. Went on a Facebook group and then looked for someone to live with and someone to go there with. So I found these three guys from a town like an hour away from my town. So I basically just met them over lunch and then drove with them down like 15 hours to St. Anton, which was pretty interesting.
15 hours?
Yeah, it was long. And I didn't know them and I was so nervous. I was just like, what am I doing? Like, I'm a girl alone on the roads with just boys. But it was so cool. So we moved to a little village outside of St. Anton, which is called Pitnoy. And we had a pretty sick villa with like balcony and like amazing views and stuff. And then, yeah, it was just like a party scene for 6 months, to be honest. Like, I remember having no money, even though I was working. Like at one point, I think I had 20 euros and I was like, oh yeah, sick. I can buy myself dinner and go out. Like, no, you cannot. Save your money, dumbass.
So where were you working and like what was your accommodation situation?
So I was working in, I think it's a 4-star hotel called Hotel Rundik. It's in the middle of St. Anton and my boss, I think his name was Klaus. So he hired me as like a breakfast hostess. So I basically said good morning to everyone and like brought them teas and coffees and then just made sure the buffet was like fully stocked and stuff. So it wasn't like super hard work. You could get pretty busy, but I mostly just walked around and was like nice to the guests and stuff. So it wasn't that hard. And then I lived in that villa with the boys and then two other girls had an apartment next to ours. So we sort of just looked at it like all of us living together. So we all used like our kitchen and everything. So that was good. Yeah. In the beginning when we got there, we went there like super early, I think the 20th of November or something. And like, obviously there was no snow, like nothing was open. So we just got drunk for like a week straight just in the house to get to know each other. I think there's other ways to get to know each other. But I mean, this seemed like a good thing when you were 19.
Yeah.
And then for work, there was no buses or anything like when I started working. So me and my friend would like hitchhike like 7 a.m. in the morning to get to work for 8. So it was definitely an interesting time because we would hitchhike back as well. But then I don't know, I think one time I ended up in a car with like two old German dudes and they were playing like German folk music and I was like alone in the back. They didn't understand a word of English. And I was like, this is probably a situation we should not put ourselves in, but I'm just gonna go for it. They were super nice. I got home eventually.
So you've been skiing for a pretty long time, like as a kid.
Yeah.
Pretty good skier.
Yeah, since I was 5, I think it was.
And what's the skiing like in St. Anton?
It's amazing. It's like connected, so you can ski all the way to Lech. And it's just like endless backcountry, and you can drive to Sonnenkopf, and you can even, it's not even that far to drive if you want to go to Innsbruck in that. I think it's like 2 hours. So it's really good.
So overall, how was that season? Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, it was amazing. Like, it was like the perfect first season. Like, there was nice. Nothing, like everyone was so like happy and welcoming and open, and it was just really great. I wish I could redo it, but then it wouldn't be the same because it wouldn't be my first season. And I'm 10 years older, so I can't drink 4 nights a week.
Yeah, it's pretty well known as a party town, isn't it, St. Anton? So,
oh, yeah. It's have to have insane. That mindset. Yeah.
I couldn't do it. Sure. No. So after St. Anton, where did you head to after that?
After that, I went home for the summer to work. But then I actually saved some money and then I went to New Zealand. Mm-hmm. So I got to New Zealand just as their winter season finished. And then I stayed there for sort of the spring and the summer.
Okay, how was
to
that?
To do like a summer season. It was really cool. It was super hot. And I worked in one of the most like popular bars for like tourists and the younger crowd, Winnie's.
Nice.
So again, it was quite a lot of partying. And we got free pizza after work. So I got super fat. So that was good. But yeah, it was really cool. I got to know like really cool people that I still can like meet up with today. So it was a great experience for sure.
Okay, so that was just for the spring summer, did you say you were there?
Yeah, exactly.
So you didn't get any skiing in?
No, I didn't. I had a chance to go ski like the last day, but then I had no like skiing gear. I had nothing. So I was like, nah, fine. Although it wasn't fine. I was crying on the inside, but it was all good.
After New Zealand, where was next on your travels?
So after New Zealand, I went to, where did I go? I went to Indonesia for a month to learn how to surf. So I pretty much stayed in Lombok the whole time to learn how to do that, which was really cool. I loved it. But it's like easy on the beginner boards because you don't have to paddle as hard. And then when you get a real board, it's like super hard. But anyway, stayed there for a month. And then I moved to Australia to Byron Bay.
Ah, okay.
Like every other backpacker.
And what were you doing out there?
I was working in a Italian cocktail bar by the beach, which was really sick because they didn't usually hire girls to work in the bar, and it's so hard to get a job in Byron Bay. And I worked with like 3 guys from like the area, and they were always, I don't know, they're just a bit silly, so it was like dead easy to work with them.
Yeah
that was a really, really good job. So I was really happy I did that. And I learned heaps about like mixing cocktails and all that stuff. So that was pretty cool.
How long were you there for?
So I was in Australia for almost a year, I think. Yeah, so I think in total I was away from home almost 2 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
In Australia, did you stay in the same job the whole time you were there?
Yeah, I did stay in the same job. I did like look for, I had a few tryouts in other places, but like I said, it's so hard and I was pretty young, so I didn't have that much work experience.
Yeah.
But I just went for it. I just kept nagging people to get a job. I was like, oh, hey, I'm back. Here's my CV. Like, you don't have 3 copies already. But yeah, it was. It's so embarrassing to look for a job sometimes because you're like, hello, sorry to disturb you, but I need a job. And they're just like, oh, another fucking backpacker from Sweden coming in looking for a job. Shut up. But yeah, it worked out in the end, clearly. So that was good.
Yeah. Yeah. Were there any sort of highlights from that trip that you remember?
I mean, all of it was pretty cool. There's a lot of hippies, or there used to be, I think now it's more like influencers maybe staying there. But it's just so beautiful. Like, I lived right by the natural reserve, so we could like walk through the forest to go, I almost said snowboarding, no, to go surfing and stuff. So that was cool. I like traveled a little bit around, around Byron and then went to Sydney and Melbourne. So I didn't see too much of Australia, which I'm quite disappointed I didn't get to see. But yeah, I will see it in the future, so it's all good.
Yeah, exactly. You can catch up on it.
Yeah, for sure.
Cool.
I loved Australia. I loved like people's attitude, like people's banter, like everything about it, basically. It was great. Yeah.
And so where did that lead you?
So Australia led me to my Meyerhofen, actually. So a few people I met in New Zealand said they were going to Meyerhofen for a season. So that's how I first sort of had anyone I knew going to Meyerhofen. And me and the person I was traveling with, we thought, okay, we want to do a season, but we want to know somewhere where we're going, because it's quite nice to have that sort of contact with someone when you go somewhere to get like tips of where to live or work or whatever. So we went to Meyerhofen and lived in Gasthof for a week.
Ah, the Gasthof.
Yeah, the Gasthof in the dorms too. I didn't even have a private room, Gina.
What?
I lived in the dorms and it was interesting.
I think it's like kind of a rule that everyone that comes on the podcast from Meyerhofen at one stage or another has either stayed in the Gasthof or at Hunger Pain.
The Gasthof Club. I actually love that because it was so easy. Like I wrote on the Seasonaires page and they just like sent us the link to the website. And I was like, this is so easy that you can just go and stay in a hostel, because I've never like experienced finding a place to live that easily before as a Seasonaire. So I was like, this is sick. Like, and then you live with other Seasonaires too. So I was really happy about it, but obviously could not do that now. No way, Jose.
Yeah, I think when you first go out and do seasons, it's kind of like you don't really know what to expect. And then a few years later, you're like, oh my God, I can't believe I did that.
Yeah. Oh.
So your first season in Meyerhofen, and where were you working? What were you doing?
So I, again, posted on the Seasonaires page. It's super useful, by the way. You guys should join it. It's great comedy, too, if you look for that. So yeah, I worked in Funky's in the downstairs bar, and I also got accommodation with the job, which was basically a hole in the ground with no kitchen. And I lived in there for two seasons as well. So I really wanted to see if I could do it. I think the dorms at Gasthof would probably be better and more hygienic, but yeah, I didn't think about that at the time. But yeah, it was an interesting job for sure. That's where I met you as well.
It is indeed. You stayed a long time in Meyerhofen, didn't you? How many seasons have you done here?
I did two seasons in Funky's, then I did four in Mike. So that's six seasons in Meyerhofen. Yeah. So quite a few. It's just after a while, it just felt like home, because I got a lot of friends. Like when I first got there, I started hanging out with a Danish guy called Casper and an Irish guy called Paddy. So then they were going back for a second season. And I was like, well, if you two are going back, then I'll definitely be going back. So I did another season in Funky's downstairs where I met a lot of great people. And then I got a job in Mike's the season after that. And then clearly it was just like, because I haven't lived in Sweden for a while, then it just felt like my interests and my friend groups have like moved to Meyerhofen instead. So I sort of considered that as home instead of like going home to Sweden, because I started to feel a bit like disconnected from Sweden and what was going on like here, I guess.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was just nice to come back to like my normality. Home away from home.
So you had the job in Funky's and you had accommodation through that job as well.
Yeah.
When you were working at Mike's, where was it that you were living and how did you find that apartment?
So I was living with Maria and Rolly, who's been on the podcast.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so I was living with Maria and Rolly. Mm-hmm. And this other chick. And then it was actually Steve Coleman's house that we got through Steve Coleman. Because he was going away to ride in Japan and stuff. So he had like a room that he wasn't going to use that much. So that was really cool because it was like super close to town. And everyone in the house was like well keen riders. So it was always like someone going up the mountain or someone doing something. And it was a really short walk to Mike's. So I can walk Chris home when he got too drunk. from Scotty's. Chris is the bartender in Mike's, for everyone who doesn't know, but yeah. Everyone should know.
He's the most requested man to come on the podcast, yet he won't come on.
Oh, that is a shame. I would listen to that.
I know, day. Everyone would listen to it, but no.
Yeah, of course.
He's keeping it to himself. Hopefully, if we put enough pressure on one day, we will get Chris Edge on the show.
Just put some Jaegers in him and he'll do anything.
Yeah, but I'm not sure we'll get a coherent interview.
It won't make sense at all.
Be like, G.
Make me a sandwich.
Legend. So went off topic there.
Yeah.
Back in the room. So you were working in Mike's. How'd you get that job? Just came down here and was like, Mike.
Yeah, please get me a job. No, obviously, Paul Withers, he used to come into Funky's quite a lot, and I even worked there. Mm-hmm. So I wrote to him and I was like, oh, do you think I could get a job in Mike's? And he said, oh, I'll speak to him. And then I already knew Chris Edge a little bit from coming down to Funky's as well. And then I actually messaged Mike as well. So all of them like sort of knew that I wanted a job there. And then Mike originally said that they already had a chick that was going to work, so he didn't have another spot. But then something happened, and like, I think it was originally because I was going to come out quite late on the season, like after New Year's.
Okay.
But then that turned out great for them because it wasn't that busy until after New Year's anyway. So then he actually said, oh yeah, you can come and work. And then I stayed for 4 seasons, just kept asking him for a job back. So nah, it's been so good. Like, I think that job made me feel even more at home, like coming back to the same position. And it's pretty cool to work where like all your friends are coming in to like have their drinks before they go out, or just have a chill or have a chat or whatever. Like, it's been sort of the heart of our group, definitely.
And now the home of the podcast too. So
and the home of the and that's where the podcast was born.
It literally yeah. was. And it is. And I'm sat in Mike's sports bar right now recording.
We've gone full circle.
How do you find the skiing in Meierhofen compared to, say, St. Anton?
I mean, I think it's my state of mind of riding is so different now because I'd rather do like off-piste stuff. So I would say that Meierhofen is better, but I don't know if that's a fair statement because I think they're both really good. No, not in the same scale. I bought my first paddle skis when I was out there, but I didn't at all like go like hiking and stuff to get the good stuff or anything like that. So I would say Meierhofen because it's just so easily accessible and there's not that many people. So you can always find something, even like days after it snowed. It's so sick. I'm really missing it. It's not the same over here. It's not the same.
Are there any other highlights that kind of spring to mind when we talk about Meierhofen for you?
Yeah, it's where I met you. It's where I met my friend Siobhan. It's where I met my fiance, Ryan. And like all my season there friends that I still like talk to today. So it's definitely like, I mean, it's pretty much the highlight of my years since I finished school, I think. It's like where I, not where I grew up, obviously, but like, because I spent the most of my adult years there, so it feels like all of it is a highlight, basically. Mm-hmm. Even like the ups and downs and everything. So
yeah,
it's just a magical little village, and I want to go back.
So you mentioned that you met your fiance here.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about your pandemic experience because you were here when that all kicked off, weren't you?
Yeah. So we just heard about a little virus and then we were like, oh no, that sounds bad. And then me and Siobhan were working in my sports bar. And then Mike basically came inside and said like, oh, snow bombing is not happening this year. And I was like devastated because it's the best time of the year. I was like, oh, this is so shit. The next like hour or two, he was like, oh yeah, and they're shutting down the lifts and all the tourists need to go home and everything is fucked. And I was just like, oh God, what am I gonna do? And so my fiance, he was just my boyfriend at the time then, so he had to travel back to Australia like within 3 days. And then we were basically locked in the house within 3 days. And you were basically alone dying in your room.
Yeah. Yeah, that was fun.
And she was so ill and COVID, and it was just, it was all happening. It was all crazy. We just started hiking a lot and being outside a lot and like started working out a lot. And I obviously couldn't go and see Ryan because Australia has been super strict about their borders.
So you were together. And then when COVID hit, Ryan all of a sudden had to leave.
Yeah, we spent the whole season together. And then because he was on a tourist visa, he had to go home or had to move anyway because his visa was about to like be finished. We had to like pack up his apartment within like 12 hours. And I basically had to like convince him and his friend Jasso to go home because the borders were closing. Like people were taking the train to Kufstein and then walking across the border to be able to like get to Munich. And I called like the taxis and stuff and they're like, no, we can't drive anyone to the airport because we can't get back across the border. Super stressful. I don't like looking back at it.
Yeah. And it kind of cut your season short as well with Ryan because you were expecting to have, what, like another month together, something like that?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It was very sudden. And then I was in the house with Shiv and Amir, and then you moved in. But then we had a really nice, we basically made the best out of the situation, I think,
yeah.
Because we did spend so much time outside and like so much time hiking and like go to Gumpen and everything. So it ended up being like a really nice time, but obviously couldn't stay in that little bubble forever. So I had to go home in June, like end of June, I think.
So you said goodbye to Ryan in March 2020.
Yeah, exactly.
We were just doing lots of hiking and outdoorsy things once we were out of lockdown, etc.
We were so healthy.
We were so healthy.
I was super fit. Like when I look back at it, I would do a hike for 1 hour behind the house and then I would go for a run as I got down from the hike. And then I would go home and do like strengthening exercises. Yeah. And this is purely from like boredom as well. It's not because I wanted to like lose weight or wanted to be like super strong or anything. It was because if I don't do this, then what am I going to do? Just like sit on my ass and like watch Netflix. Like I've seen The Tiger King. I can't watch it again. So like, what was I going to do?
Yeah, that was it. We were just like trying to do whatever we could because we couldn't work and couldn't do anything.
Yeah. And you weren't even allowed to hang out with people. You weren't even allowed to be like a certain amount of people in your house. So it was basically like, I remember you and me like going sunbathing like up the hill and we were scared that someone saw us because you could get fined if you were outside.
Yeah, yeah.
And these two men were like checking out the fence, which sounds weird, but it was like it's like an avalanche fence and they need to like fix it if it's broken or whatever.
Yeah.
And we were like, oh my God, well, what if we get fined now? Because we're outside. We're basically, no one can see us. Like we're in the middle of the forest. Like how, what are the chances that they just come walking up?
Yeah, it was so
but weird. Yeah, it was so weird. But it was a scary time.
That summer, when I think about it, it was bizarre, but it was still fun in some weird way. Like I loved living with you guys.
Oh, it was so much fun.
Yeah, I'd been living on my own for so long in that fucking crack den. And yeah. Then I was in hospital, wasn't I? And then I came out and then, yeah, moved in with you guys. Yeah, I was so nervous about moving in with you guys, but it was just, oh, I loved it.
Yeah, we're all pretty easy to live with. Yeah. I think I'm a bit of a clean freak, so I can definitely be difficult on that front. But
it was a good time, even though it was a bit of a difficult time. And it was particularly difficult for you because how long was it until you saw Ryan again?
It was 374 days, but who's counting?
What was your plan at that point?
So basically, as soon as everything settled down a bit with the COVID situation, when it sort of like became spring and summer, we tried to apply for me to go to Australia or like figure out how I would get there, which we tried for like months. I mean, we even got like a immigration lawyer and everything. So since Ryan was working in Australia, he's earning like really good money. So he could basically pay for all the lawyers and everything. Mm-hmm. But so was everyone. Like, there was Australian families who were stuck in, like, I don't know, other countries and couldn't go back. So obviously they would go before me. So we actually, like, gave up that whole process when it came to Ball, because it would probably be easier for him to just come to Sweden on the work and holiday visa.
Yeah.
So then we applied for that, and that took 3 months as well. And then he got denied. But then Australians have, they can get an automatic tourist visa when they come to Sweden for 3 months. So as long as Ryan got an exemption to travel, he could come to Sweden, and then we would just figure it out. So that's what he did. So it was super, super stressful. One of the hardest things I've ever gone through.
Yeah.
Hands down. Yeah. It was so shit.
Just kind of like the anticipation of, like, waiting to see him and not knowing when, I guess.
Yeah, just not, like, even if someone told me, oh, you can see him on this date in a year's time, I would be like, okay, fine. But it was nothing like that. It was just, like, never knowing anything. You can't even, like, affect the situation whatsoever. You can't, like, work towards a solution at all. You just have to sit on your ass and wait for someone else to say, oh, yeah, now you can go. It was just, yeah, it was ridiculous. But got through it, got stronger. Yep. Got wiser, and here we are.
Fianced. Betrothed.
Betrothed to be married.
So what were you doing in Sweden in that time?
I actually started my own company with a friend, which is quite random, but I used to do, like, roof maintenance. So my dad owned this company where you basically, you take away, you spray this liquid on the roof, and then it kills, like, all the algae and moss and all that sort of stuff that can hurt the slate. So since I've already done that and we had all the stuff, we just thought, because she was in the last month of uni and she needed cash and I needed cash, and you can earn quite a good amount of money on that. So we're like, okay, well, let's just try it, because we're not paying for anything really to start up the company, so we can just, if it fails, it fails, but we won't owe anyone money. So we did that for actually almost a year, which was, like, a super cool experience. It's really hard to, like, market your way into the business just for, like, 1 year, but we got, like, a lot of customers. They're even calling me now to, like, come back, because they love that girls are, like, doing the job.
Cool.
So there's basically, like, you want your roof done, and then we call and we, like, set up the meeting and everything, and, like, we write them a quote and all that. And then when the day comes, it's, like, two blonde girls with, like, climbing harnesses and ladders and stuff. And they're just like, oh, are you doing it? And we're like, yeah. You see anyone else here? No.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was really cool. Like, you got mad respect from doing it. Like, the men would just stand outside and, like, stare and be like, whoa, this is so cool. So yeah, awesome. It was really good.
Oh. So at that point, were you planning still to go back to Australia, or?
Yeah, so since Ryan was back, it was like we could relax for a little bit, but we still always had in mind that we wanted to go after the summer, because with my company it was like peak season during the summer, obviously. Mm-hmm. And then we're like, okay, well, when that's finished, we can go to Australia. But then it was still super hard to get into Australia or to buy tickets or get an exemption and all that. So we decided to come here, because we went for a little holiday up to my family's cabins in the fall. And then we said, well, if we're still gonna, like, be in Sweden, we might as well, like, make the best out of it and not be in the south where it's, like, quite gray and depressing. We can, like, go up to the north and ski and, like, get a good job and all that. So yeah, we came here and here we are. And it's sunny today for the first mm-hmm. time in ages.
So you and Ryan are now in Sweden doing your season there. Whereabouts is it that you are?
So it's called Åre. Mm-hmm. It's basically, I say the north because I'm from the south, but, like, it's basically just in the middle.
And what are you doing for work out there?
So I'm working at Copperhill Mountain Lodge, which is a super fancy hotel. And then I'm working for Strobe Brand, which is a ski snowboard apparel brand.
Okay.
Just started this year. So I'm doing both. So I'm working quite a lot, which is good. because the writing is not that good. So then I spend more time on like other stuff.
What kind of work are you doing for Strobe brand?
I'm basically doing their social media and then collaborations or just anything he throws at me, basically. Yeah, and we always look for new photographers and stuff. So I do that as well. And yeah, just a lot of social media things.
Have you done anything like that before? Or?
No, I haven't. It's basically the first time, but he is quite, when he sees that someone wants to learn and someone's like eager and cares about the company, then he'll be like stoked to hire you because he will be like, okay, well, if you really care about this and if you want to like grow within the business, then that's perfect for me, even though you don't know like everything there is to know or you haven't done like a degree or whatever. So that's really good.
Cool. So how long are you going to be in Sweden for? When does the season finish? And then what are you planning to do after that?
So the season finishes basically end of April, like after Easter, like most other places. Mm-hmm. But we're going to Australia, and we're going to stay for another month and then go home, visit Shiv in Scotland, maybe go to Marhofen if I can get my if I can get my will through.
Please
go. Yeah, I would love that. And then head to Australia like mid-April sort of thing.
Nice.
Yeah, really nice. Really exciting.
Yeah, very exciting.
Just waited for a visa for 18 months, so it's about time. So if you want to go to Australia, apply now so then you maybe can go in 2 years' time. Just a tip for anyone.
Yeah, we'll get onto your visa tips in a bit.
Oh, great.
And we'll hear more from Wendy after this very quick ad break. Fancy taking the leap and working abroad? Gap360 are a UK-based travel company that offer over 200 experiences in over 50 amazing destinations, including incredible working holiday opportunities in Australia, available right now. Gap360 have a team of expert travel advisors to plan your working holiday and can help with flights, visa advice, insurance, and budget planning. Start your working holiday with a fun, life-changing week in Sydney, Melbourne, or the Queensland coast with a group of like-minded travellers before 12 months of job support from Gap360's local dedicated teams to find your perfect job down under. It's time to work and play the Aussie way. Next month, Gap360 will be launching an incredible opportunity to help make your Australia working holiday dream a reality. So head to gap360.com/seasonair to sign up and be the first in the know. So what we'll do now is, should we move on to the questions that I've got?
Yeah, sure.
Awesome. So they're the questions that I kind of ask everyone.
Yeah.
Talking of visa advice, do you have any advice for our listeners on visa applications?
So I usually just like dive headfirst into visas. I never really like think too much about it. Mm-hmm. But now that I've had a bit of a struggle, obviously during the pandemic with visas, I would say like, just do some research about the visa. Like, do you need like some money saved up, or do you need certain documents that are quite easily just to have as a backup if you need them? Or like, yeah, just do some research before you apply so you have everything ready, so you don't have to do everything last minute. And then, yeah, like I never did like research about like where I was going either, really. Yeah. So I would say, yeah. Look up where you're going, like how to get there properly. Like, is there a bus you can take maybe? Or like, because in the end, if you prepare yourself for your trip, then there's like a lot of costs that you won't have to pay, for an example, or like you just feel more at ease or you feel safer traveling. Mm-hmm. So that would be my tip for sure. Don't fly to New Zealand to Christchurch and just sit at the airport and think, oh, I'll just buy a ticket to Queenstown instead of taking the bus, because that's just easy to jump on a plane, and then it'll cost you like €400 extra.
Was that an experience you had personally, Wendy, by any chance?
Well, I thought it was cheap, but I didn't really look at that. Also, look up the currency. Like, what is it compared to your currency? Like, how much money are you spending when you spend like dollars or whatever? Like, just be smart. Don't be dumb.
Good advice.
Yeah.
So if someone was planning on doing only one season, they only had a limited amount of money, where would you recommend them to go and why?
See, it's really hard because it depends on what you want out of your season. Mm-hmm. But I would say to go to Austria because it is cheaper and it is quite, I don't know, I think it's like super, people are really welcoming. I haven't done like a season in France and stuff, but I've traveled there and there is a bit of a different vibe. But yeah, I would say somewhere in Austria, probably. I would say St. Anton, but it's quite expensive.
Okay.
So maybe like a smaller place like Meierhofen. Meierhofen is quite, I think it's quite hard to get into Meierhofen if you're just there for one season. So maybe like a bigger place in Meierhofen.
What was your best season job and your worst season job and why?
My best and worst season job.
Or travel jobs.
Yeah, I think because my season jobs have been like all right. Like I'm always prepared to work. I've always worked when I've traveled. That's how I've been able to travel. So I usually just get on with it. Mm-hmm. But my last summer in Norway, during the summer, I would go and work in Oslo in between Meierhofen. Mm-hmm. So I worked in a super posh place where there was like all the rich kids coming to drink Dom Pérignon and be dickheads. So I would serve them champagne. And the boss we had my last summer, he just never worked in hospitality. And he was just so shit. Like we were always understaffed. Like the kitchen was a mess. Like it was just so stressful to work there. At the end of that, I even ripped up my contract and threw it on the floor because I was that fucking done with the place. I was like, you guys will never make it anywhere in life, you pathetic people. So that was probably my worst job. That was just because of the boss. Like the staff, they were good. But yeah, the boss was just, I don't even know how to explain it. Just like head in the clouds.
Did you like Norway though in general, or was that somewhere that you just went to kind of get a bit of money behind you?
Originally, yes, but I do really like, I've just been in Oslo. I haven't really traveled around Norway, but it is beautiful. But I do like their being outside mentality. Mm-hmm. And it is a really cool place if you do want to go and earn money. And there's a lot of different nationalities. So yeah, I would definitely recommend going there to like save some money and stuff. You get like amazing wages and tips, so it's really good.
Cool.
Yeah, and my best job would have to be like obviously what I'm doing now with Strobe, because that's like something new, and like I always wanted to work with a ski brand or be involved with like work with something with skiing. So it's kind of like a something I dreamt about when I was younger, and now I'm actually doing it. Even though it's just like part-time, it's still cool to learn about something new.
Yeah.
Other than that, it would be mics, because it's just like being in your own living room and then just handing people beers.
Yeah.
Like super simple, no pressure, just having a good time.
Yeah, we love Mike Sports Bar.
Yeah, it's just the best.
So where's the best place you've ever visited and why?
I would have to say, I sound so biased, but like I would have to say Meierhofen again, because of like the like sports opportunities you get there. Mm-hmm. Like all the hiking, the skiing, like, and the people are so like-minded and very like inspiring and creative. So I don't know, it just lifts you up a bit to be there and to speak to people and to do your sports and to just, yeah. And it's beautiful.
Yeah.
So that would be my number one choice. For now, I don't know about in the future, but for now.
For now. I think a lot of these are going to be quite similar, but
yeah, that's okay.
Where and when was your favorite season and why?
My favorite season would be like 2018 to 2019 in Meierhofen, because I found myself in a situation where like I was feeling quite shit for a while. And then I actually like decided to do something about it. And then I stopped caring so much about what other people would think or will think about me or think about what I was doing or whatever. And then I met Ryan, and then it was just like a really nice and carefree time.
Yeah.
And we decided to go to Italy to see Metallica. Like, I did all these things that I wanted to do for quite a long time. And I just said, oh, fuck it. I'll just do whatever gets thrown at me. I'll do it, basically.
Nice.
So it was really good.
Summer seasons or winter seasons?
I think they're quite dependent on each other. I wouldn't want to just be on a winter season constantly. Mm-hmm. But I do feel like myself when I'm around, like, snow and, like, skiing. So probably winter seasons.
Yeah. But now you're going to be going to Oz.
And now I'm going to Endless Summer. So that's a good choice. No, they have snow as well.
Yeah, they got the snow. You get the best of both worlds.
I'm planning to like make strobe worldwide so then I can work in the New Zealand, Australia office.
Yeah.
So then I can have snow around me as well.
Awesome. Where's your favorite place to ski?
My favorite place to ski, actually, when they built the new, or not new anymore, but the Moselbahn lift, that opened up a lot of like cool opportunities at the sort of back of the mountain.
Yeah,
in Meierhofen, sorry. So that's like super cool that you can sort of ski down to that little village off the back and then take the Moselbahn back up again. Other than that, it would have to be Hochzugen in Sellertal.
Okay.
Because it's just like, I don't know, it's just beautiful landscapes, like endless backcountry, like super easy accessible, and like there's not many people there as well. So that has been a favorite for a few years.
In your opinion, what is the best thing about season life or being a seasonaire in general?
I think the fact that you like left the what society considers to be a normal life. And you've just sort of went on your own path and stuck with it. And just there's so many people around you in a season that are not just like drunk young seasonaires. They like have businesses and careers and they're super driven. And then they do the snowboarding and skiing on the side and combine the two. And that to me is so inspiring and super cool. So I feel like when you're on a season and you meet these people, that's like when you feel the most inspired yourself as well. Because people are so creative. Like, you can literally do anything if you just put your mind into it.
Yeah. Can you tell us about a challenge or difficulty you faced during your seasonaire journey and what did you learn from it?
So I always have this one challenge and difficulty that I still struggle with a little bit. And it's because when you travel, you stay away from your family and your friends at home. And I always have a feel of guilt that I'm not there for them when something happens. But I mean, obviously, just because you're not there physically doesn't mean you're not there for them. So it's just something I would have to, like, I still work on that myself now. I think that's been the hardest part, actually.
Yeah.
Like, wherever I go, I'm always leaving someone behind.
Yeah.
That I've, like, gotten to know, or, like, leaving a place behind where I'd like to be, or, like, yeah. You scatter little pieces of yourself, like, all over the world almost.
Yeah, yeah. So you've had loads of crazy, fun experiences. Are there any opportunities or unlikely stories that stand out to you that you wouldn't have had if you hadn't have left your home country?
I mean, obviously, if I wouldn't have left my home country, I wouldn't have met you or Siobhan or my fiancé. Or I wouldn't have gone and seen, we wouldn't have gone to Milan and seen Metallica. No, but I think if I didn't go, if I didn't leave my home country, like my whole life that I've created wouldn't have, like I think I would have been a different person. So in a sense, like the seasons and my traveling made me. So it's just not, it's not one thing, it's like all of it.
Yeah. With that in mind, what do you think you would be doing now if you hadn't left to do a season?
I don't think there would be another option, really, because I was always like, I always had my mind set on traveling. Like my mom even says it now, like when I was younger, I was speaking about like New Zealand or Australia or like going skiing somewhere. So I don't think I would have done anything else.
That's good. Like, because sometimes in this life, you do feel a little bit like, oh, am I supposed to be doing this? And like you get all the societal pressure that comes along with it.
Yeah, I feel like that. The societal pressure has been the hardest to like go against. But at the same time, like when I compare with like other people that fell for the pressure, they've been like quite, I don't know, sad or like jealous of how I'm living. So yeah, I'm not saying I'm doing better. No, I'm not saying this is the path for everyone or this is what everyone should do. But for me, it was the right thing to do.
Yeah. So I think I know the answer to this one as well. But throughout all your travels, which place feels most like home to you?
San Anton, no. It would be Meyerhofen for sure. Yeah, it's just because I've been there the most, basically. And I've gotten to know the people and everything. And I keep mentioning it all the time, so. It would be weird if I said anything else. You know, this one time in Meyerhofen, like I'm like a repeated, what do you call it? A repeated record?
Broken record.
Oh my God, English. Broken record. Am I the first person on this podcast who's not like English as their first language?
You're the second, but the first is Charlotte, and her episode's coming out tomorrow. So she's German. So you're the second.
I'm the second. Because I was thinking about that, because sometimes, like, obviously I've been speaking English fluently for a long time, but I still, like, stumble on my words. And now my Swedish is, like, quite terrible. I notice when I try and sound, like, business-orientated or, like, serious, mm-hmm. I can't find the vocabulary or the words, and it just ends up with me sounding a bit dumb. It's just hard.
You're doing
languages
great.
Are hard. Thank you. Thank you, yeah, so
you're,
much. You know,
very impressive. Very impressive English.
Beautiful.
So when you were away, or when you are away from Sweden or away from home, what do you miss most?
So there's this delicious pastry thing in Sweden called semla. And it's always like in the shops during February and March. Mm-hmm. And I always miss out on it because I'm obviously never in Sweden during that time, or haven't been. I actually like Googled how to explain it in English. I'm going to see if I find it. Okay. So the Swedish Finnish semla consists of a cardamom spiced wheat bun, which has its top cut off, and it's filled with a mix of milk and almond paste topped with whipped cream. The cut-off top serves as a lid and is dusted with powdered sugar. I mean, come on. How can you not love that? It's so, honestly, it's so good. And then I thought I found one in Austria, in Kochner. But it was, like, not the same at all. Like, it was obviously a completely different thing. It just looked the same. So I was so disappointed. It was still nice. But, like, it needs to be perfect, not nice. So yeah,
so you've been able to have those this year.
Yeah, I've had heaps. And they're not that good for you, obviously. Like they're called like fat semla because there's so much like sugar and yeah, it's just fucking delicious. If you find one somewhere, you have to try it. Yeah, the thing I miss the most is a pastry. Wow, tough life. Should I say my family probably?
Like everyone thinks they should say their family, but everyone says bread, crisps, like nuggets.
But it is weird with what you, because I'm in Sweden, you have fika, which is basic, essentially a coffee break with a cake, but it's such a like important part of our culture. So like pastries and coffee is really like important to me because I grew up with it. So when you take that somewhere else, you obviously miss that it's a part of the culture, because sometimes people are like, why do you need to eat cake all the time? And I'm like, you don't understand. It's not the cake itself. It's my culture. Like we just sit and chat shit and eat cake and drink coffee. I can't explain it to people.
Sounds great.
Yeah, it's perfect.
So if you could go back and give your younger self one piece of advice, what would it be?
I wish I would not have cared so much about what people thought about my living situation or my chosen path to travel, even when I had like worries about it being the right thing to do. Obviously, then people would give you their advice, but like it wasn't really the right advice for me.
Yeah.
So I wish I would just not listen to that. But it's obviously hard when you feel a bit lost or feel a bit unsure about what you're doing.
Yeah, for sure. Do you think that's stopped now?
Yeah. I think now people around me have learned that there's no point of telling me what to do.
Do you feel confident in your decision now? I mean, you said obviously this is the path you feel like you were actually meant to go on anyway. Do you feel like more relaxed about, you know, you don't question it anymore?
100%. I'm honestly so happy with it's almost like I've chosen like being happy and content instead of like if I went to uni, for an example, if I spent like that many years in uni, I would have been miserable because I hated school. So instead of that and maybe getting a good job, I've chosen this and I've been quite happy and content. And that to me is more important than a career.
Yeah. Was there any point that you considered going to university or doing further education? And if you did, what were you going to do at that point?
Yeah, there's been a few times where I've like, again, felt a bit lost. And then it's like, okay, should I just go to school? And then my mom and my dad actually said, you should just try and apply for it in case you want to do it in the future. So I did apply. I did get in. It was like something about tourism. It was so long ago. I don't even remember. And then I did apply to go to Australia as well to study a few years ago. Mm-hmm. But I never chose like what to study. That's the issue as well. I wouldn't have known what to study. So I just would have picked something and then hated it.
That's the thing, is like a lot of people do. People go to uni, pick something, but it's something that in 20 years' time they don't want to do. And then it's never time wasted, but a lot of people take that path. So, So on the topic of advice, what's the best and what's the worst piece of advice you've ever been given?
Well, the worst advice would be that I should go to uni or something because I would have hated it. Mm-hmm. So that was probably a bad advice. The best advice is actually from my brother when I graduated, and he said, just go and ski as much as you can. And I did. So, and then also, actually, I met this man when I was working the other day. And I was a bit like, I think I forgot something. And I was like, oh, I'm sorry, I'm pretty scattered minded. And he was like, no, so you're an artist. I was like, oh, that's a nice take on being scattered minded. Thank you, sir. I'm an artist now. Thank you. So when everyone thinks I'm messy or forgetful, I'm just going to say I'm an artist. It's perfect.
That is perfect. I love
right?
that.
I've never seen it like that. It just opened my mind to a whole nother world. Thank you, Mr. Danish Man at Copper Hill.
Yeah, I might have to adopt that one myself. We talk a lot about mentors on the show. Do you have any mentors that helped you along in your journey at all?
It would probably be like, well, mentor / mental support would probably be like my brother, because he, even the first time I wanted to do a season, because he was doing seasons, he like helped me with my first CV and stuff, and mm-hmm. helped me apply. It was actually for here in Ore before I went to Samantha. I never ended up going here, obviously. Yeah. But yeah, it would be him for sure.
Do you have any quotes or sayings that you live by?
I mean, fake it till you make it has been a big part of my life.
Same.
Yeah, I think that would be the one.
Yeah.
Because it's so true. It's so cliche, but it's like you just have to like dive into stuff and just do it and just like act like you know what you're doing.
Yeah.
And I think that's what everyone is doing. No one knows what they're fucking doing.
Exactly. Do you have any books, publications, podcasts, anything like that, that you can recommend to our listeners which helped you on your path? Or have you got anything that has inspired you recently?
I think something that inspired me to do seasons when I was younger was that snowboard movie, That's It, That's All. That's where kids MGMT, like that song, was like their soundtrack.
Ah, okay.
And I watched it so many times. Like, I'm not a snowboarder, but like I just loved that movie when I was younger, and it really inspired me. I was like, that looks so sick. Like, I want to do whatever they're doing. Like, I want to be in the snow. I want to listen to the song until I puke from hearing it. No, but like it's a sick movie. I love it. Watch it.
That's it, that's all. Cool. What is one myth about season air life that you would like to debunk?
I think a myth is that everyone is like drunken, messy, useless teenagers. Mm-hmm. because obviously they exist. Like I said before, a lot of the people doing seasons have like full-time careers and businesses, and like just because the younger crowd tend to party, it doesn't mean that everyone's like that or everyone's doing it. So yeah, that's definitely, and like people do shower and stuff and like have real jobs and not everyone is sleeping at the back of a car.
Just some people.
Yeah, I guess they actually do.
I have to ask you Margalinda's favorite question. What's one thing you take with you everywhere when you travel, or do you have any travel hacks?
I mean, traveling without headphones would surely be illegal by this point. Like, that's so, like, honestly, so crucial. Even when I was younger and I was traveling, I would always have my iPod on me.
Yeah.
And just like sit and listen to music and like look out the window and pretend you're in a music video or something to the song. Like, it just like makes traveling go so much quicker.
Definitely.
So yeah, I would go, no, like if I had no headphones when traveling, I would just, it would feel like it took double the amount of time.
Yeah. At this point in time, I take a spare pair of headphones, two sets, just in case.
You are just a professional. Like, I have never even thought about that. Because I have a dumb iPhone and you have the AirPods, otherwise you can't charge your phone at the same time. Who thought of that? Travel hacks. I mean, it would probably be to like bring your own food and stuff, or like bring snacks, because like airport food is quite expensive. Mm-hmm. And it's,
that's
usually quite
well.
Shit. Is it?
Yeah.
We have the same state of mind. We just think about food. But yeah, like food and water. Because you can bring your empty water bottle with you through security. So like then you can just fill it up instead of paying, what, like, I don't even know how much water costs at the airport. But yeah, bring your own stuff. Like, make sure you're full, because it's really stressful traveling when you're like on an empty stomach and all that stuff. So yeah, food.
For you, what was the biggest lesson learned from living and working abroad?
Biggest lesson learned? I think we've touched on this before, but it's probably just to stay on your path, even though someone else might say it's not maybe the right one. Because if you, like, if you just go with your gut feeling, you'll get rewarded at the end of it. So just trying to think about yourself for a little bit. Yeah, that's my lesson learned.
Is there anything that season life has brought to your current life?
Well, I'm still on a season now, so it's still bringing me all sorts of things. And it's basically brought me my whole grown-up life. So to me, it's like everything. And like my fiance and my friends and everything. So yeah, just everything.
Aww. If you were in my shoes, what's one question you would have asked that I didn't?
I know people don't like to spill their secrets on best powder spots. But I would probably ask in their resort, like, since we all are friends here, just spill the beans. Just tell us. Just let us know where to go. A shady spot, like covered from the wind, like, just tell us and we can go and enjoy it together.
Should I ask you that?
I mean, mine would probably be like the mobile one that I was talking about before, because I haven't been back now, so I don't really remember exactly where I usually go, but that's like my golden little area.
That is enough from you, because if I ask that and you give me lots of spots, then I would be in big trouble with like Westy and Rowley.
Oh,
and
no.
Those guys.
I didn't.
And
say
all
anything.
The locals would literally kill me.
So it's the threat. That's why we can't ask this question. It's not about that people don't like to share. It's the threat.
I will be in so much trouble. I'll be banned. I'll be kicked out of my office.
You will be. And then you have no home.
Yes, I can't. I can't ask you that. Anyway, you've already shared enough.
Yeah, I've shared enough.
So is there anyone you would like to nominate to come on the show and have a chat with me?
I would like to nominate two people I haven't actually spoken to for ages, but I met them both in New Zealand. Mm-hmm. And one of them is Zach Manpro. I met him randomly in New Zealand and then again in Meyerhofen. Then he basically like cycled to Asia and stayed there for ages and living out of a tent. And then that to me is super interesting, because like I don't even know, I would never think about doing that. And he's super funny. when we lived in New Zealand, he basically lived in a garage without lighting, and then he had no shoes. So that's like my strongest memories about him. Then Kaylee Christian, after getting to know her in New Zealand, I then randomly met her in Australia and in my Meyerhofen, which is pretty funny, like how small the world is. But she's a photographer, and I think she's based in Idaho. She's got really lovely pictures that really make you like want to go outside and enjoy the outside. So that could definitely be an interesting conversation.
Is there anything you would like to promote at all?
I mean, I can promote this awesome new brand for ski clothing, Stroll brand. It's organic and recycled fabrics. No, but we do also look for cool street artists or photographers or people to like do collaborations with. So with like the street artists, if we have a specific collaboration with someone, we can like design them their own jacket. But then we obviously, it's like a three-way collaboration with the writer, the street artist, and us, which I find pretty cool because I've not really seen that before. And then there's these sick shades and beanies called Werewolters.
Ah, yes.
That
course.
You can wear on the slopes, bamboo made.
That's your brother's brand.
Yeah, my brother's brand. No, but it's been, honestly, it's been sponsoring me with shades for years, and I always wear them, not because I'm cheap. Don't look at me like that. Because they're cool.
They are. They're very cool.
And he just dropped a line of beanies as well. So you can cover your eyes and keep your scon warm.
Cool. Shout out to Werewolves. Shout out to your brother, Will.
Absolute legend.
So what's next for Wendy?
So I'm heading to Australia and I'm going to meet my fiance's family for the first time.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
And then a lot of his friends that I've never met. And I'll go and see some of our friends like Jacqueline and Will and that. That'll be amazing. And then, yeah, just see where that takes me, basically.
Plan a wedding.
Oh, yeah, I need to plan a wedding. Jesus, that sounds so grown up. Yeah, fuck, I forgot about that. I have to plan a wedding. Fuck. How do you even do that? Is there like a course on how you plan a wedding?
Fake it till you make it.
I'm like, yeah, I'm just faking it. I'm literally the least, like, people who know me would probably say the same thing. Like, I don't think anyone would expect me to be like the sort of first one to get married because I'm not really like marriage material per se. I'm not like a super girly girl who wish to get married her whole life.
Yeah.
I don't have a box under my bed with like wedding plans and baby names and all that shenanigans. The unexpected bride. I'm going to write a book about it. Stay tuned.
You could start a podcast.
No, I'm super excited. I can just see how it's going to be just mayhem of drunken Australians and people from UK and Swedish people trying to understand what's going on. Maybe I should make like a festival out of it.
Definitely.
Like really, really put the work in. Get some good DJs, get everything in.
Yeah, do it. Where can people find you if they want to see what you've been up to?
People can find me on my Instagram. Just search for Vendelala with a W. Or for like business inquiries, you can email vendela.langian@strollbrand.com. So like if you know of any photographers or like if you have any ideas of like cool collaborations or anything, just don't be afraid to like give us a shout because we're open to new ideas.
Nice.
Yeah.
Have you got one parting piece of advice for anyone who is either about to go on their first season or is thinking about going on their first season?
I'd say like the first thing you do, like see if there's a Facebook group because like that's always been my first step because instantly you have a community where people know more than you and people can help you out and people are quite keen to help you out.
Yeah.
So I would always get into the groups, like get involved, chat to everyone, see what they're doing. And then other than that, just go for it.
So that is all the questions.
Wow, we did it.
It has been fun to catch up. We haven't actually had a chat for a while, so that was really good.
Yeah, it's been really good. It feels like I've been hanging out with you for, well, I have been hanging out with you for like 3 hours. So it feels great. It feels like I'm back at Goldkind. I even had a coffee, so it was good.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you so much. It was so nice to be on. I'm very honored.
Oh, thank you for coming on. I really appreciate it. Yeah, lovely to talk to you.
Thank you. Cheers.
It's always so much fun to catch up with one of my mates for the podcast. Thanks again to the wonderful Wendela Langean for coming on the show today. Don't forget to check out the show notes for any links relating to today's show. And remember to head over to Instagram and Facebook. Give us a follow at That Season Air Podcast to be the first to hear of all the latest from Resort. Shout out to our sponsors, Gap360. As always, a huge thank you to Mike at Mike's Sports Bar for the studio space. Thank you to Mondo Way for the music. And thanks to you guys for tuning in. See you all again next time.
I don't, am I allowed to make that joke?
Probably not.
No, okay. So I also got